How's everybody doing? I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here. Thanks, Dave. I'd like to thank Dave for asking me to come out and for the group for having me. My sobriety date is May 23rd, 2008. My home group is the Fourth Dimension Group. We meet on Friday nights at 7 over at Trinity Presbyterian Church, and it's an open speaker meeting. It's kind of similar to this. You know, we got a 10-minute speaker, and we got a main speaker. And I'm the main speaker tonight. The big book tells me to tell you guys what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today, and I'll try to do that. Born and raised in Massachusetts. It takes me a little while to get going when I get up here usually. It's one of my least favorite things to do here, coming out and sharing my experience, strength, and hope, but I know in order to keep the seat, I have to do this stuff, so. But I come from a loving home, four brothers, two sisters, and the majority of us are alcoholics. The majority of us, and there's some drugs in my story, I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I like to stick to the alcoholism, but, just drugs helped me hit my bottom a lot quicker. I started drinking, pretty sure it was around like high school, 8th grade, 9th grade, 14 years old, and my first drink, it was called Sex on the Beach, and nothing bad happened that night. Me and a couple of the guys that I was hanging out with, they said that the beginning of the week, that they were going to go out drinking at the end of the week, and I was all in, I was just a follower my whole life, I'll back up a little bit before that, but and this is even before I picked up alcohol. I was just, restless, irritable, and discontented my whole entire life. I was just uncomfortable no matter where I was. I just wanted to always be doing, there was just a lot of kids in my family. There was 7 of us, So, I guess maybe I was high maintenance or something, the amount of time that I needed my mom to spend with me, I just wasn't getting, and I always wanted to be out of the house and doing something different, and I always wanted we got that on tape. But I always wanted to be out of the house and just doing something different. I remember, I was about 7, 8 years old, and I started playing the trumpet, and I was getting really good at it, And the good part about it was my teacher, she was a woman and she was really pretty. And when I did good in class, she used to bring in candy bars, right? And then one of the kids I was hanging out with said, what are you doing? You're playing the trumpet, you're a sissy. That was it, I quit the trumpet, And things like that went on my whole entire life, the guys I was hanging out with, they didn't approve of that stuff, I quit. I was a quitter my whole life, and that's before I picked up alcohol, I like to mention that, I was saying at the beginning, my family, this thing runs deep in my family. My dad was an alcoholic, and he died from untreated alcoholism at the age of 53 years old. And his identical twin brother passed away at 43. They died from heart disease that was caused by alcoholism. I remember on my 17th birthday, and this is coming from an alcoholic, and my family didn't know anything about alcoholism. My granddad passed away when I was 6 years old from cirrhosis of the liver. But, back then, no one knew of alcoholism. It wasn't mentioned. And this is coming from my dad. I was drinking. We were having White Russians when I was 17 years old. I'm drinking with my dad and the downstairs neighbor. And, I'm sucking these things down. And he was like, dude, you got to slow down. And that's coming from an alcoholic. He's like, you got to stop drinking. And that's that's how I drank. I wanted to get as much in me as quickly as possible so it can, it does the effect, the effect produced by alcohol. And that went on my whole life, and that's how I drank, you know. And then, you know, I was about, you know, and with alcohol along came, you know, the marijuana. You know, like, I was so scared my whole life that I didn't want to say no. Like, I knew the things that my friends were doing weren't the right things to do. Like, my parents raised me with good morals and values, and I just wanted to be accepted, so I did what they were doing. Like, I mean, we went through a summer where we were drinking Budweiser and taking Valiums all the time, and I used to just wake up in stolen cars, you know? I'd be in a blackout in a stolen car, and that stuff was okay, you know? And that's, you know, I didn't want to be called a sissy, you know? You know, and you know, my brothers, they did a lot of prison time because of alcohol and drugs. And I used to always say that I'm never going to be like them. You know, I never did a serious time. I've been to jail, but never nothing serious. You know, 30, 40 days was the most I ever spent in jail, but that was enough. You know, I didn't like my freedom taken away from me. And I said I was never going to be like my older brother and my younger brother, and I ended up exactly like them. You know, so, you know, the first drink, and, you know, and I ended down here with a drink in Florida on the 22nd of, bless you. You know, so, you know, like, a lot of drugs came into play, you know, with that alcohol, and eventually I ended up, and this is where I'm just going to mention it, and then I'll just get right out of it. I ended up taking some pain medicine, like, back when I was about 21 years old, and I eventually ended up getting hooked on opiates, and then back up north, it ain't like down here. There's like no pain management. It's not pills. It's heroin, you know. And I ended up on heroin for about 13 years, and it brought me to a lot of places where I never wanted to go and things that I never wanted to see, and it just brought me to a dark place in my life, and it was bad. It was a bad experience, you know. So that's like getting on that stuff just started in and out of detoxes, in and out of rehabs, and back up north, it's easy to get into rehab, you know. So if you're an alcoholic and you're a drug addict, you can get into, like, that day you get into rehab. They're just everywhere, and that's what I started doing. You know, I wasn't working at the time, and you know, Massachusetts, they give you health insurance and dental and stuff like that. So I was a alcoholic drug addict with good insurance, you know. I started going to rehabs. Get my teeth cleaned, go to rehab. No, but I started going to rehabs a lot. I'd go in, a month later I'd be back in detox. And I don't know, I was probably 4 or 5 years into this thing, and kept on going in and out of this one rehab, and the halfway house coordinator said something to me one time. He was like, you know, when's enough going to be enough? And he was like, you know, that door isn't going to open one of these times, and you're not going to make it back in here. And he was like, listen, your insurance is getting ready to run out. What are you going to do? And I said, for the first time, I was out of gas. I had no answers. You know, normally I had a plan B, but I just didn't have one this time. He goes, I suggest you go to a halfway house. Set it up, and he set up a halfway house, and that was the first time I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to this halfway house, I go to the interview, I come back the next day with my belongings, and I stay there for about 5 3/4 months. I never graduated. They wanted you to, you know, find an AA sponsor, find an AA home group, find a job, you know, and follow all these rules. I just wasn't used to following rules, and I didn't do exactly what they told me to do, and I ended up getting thrown out like 5 3/4 months into graduating, and I just moved in with my sponsor. But he wasn't really a sponsor; he was just like a friend. You know, it was a guy that was reading the Big Book at the halfway house like once a week, and we just became really good friends. And I called him up when I got thrown out, and I went and lived with him for a couple of months, and then I moved back to the city that I grew up in, and then I only stayed sober for about a year that time. And you know, I grew materialistically. That was my thing. Like growing up where I grew up, I always thought you measured up by what you had. You know, seeing the kids on the corners, they had nice cars, pretty girlfriends, nice apartments, and you know, and uh, and they just did whatever they wanted to do. And that's how I thought you were supposed to live life. And so that's what I did. I got a nice car, you know, I had a girlfriend, had a decent job, and and I thought that's what it was, you know. And the obsession went away for that year that I stayed sober. You know, and then the girlfriend got sick of my crap and she broke up with me, and the repo guy came looking for the car. You know, and what do? I do what I do best, I drink. You know, and alcohol works really good for about 3 months. You know, and then I get back on the opiates. And so I drank for about 3 months that time, and I get back on the opiates for a little while, and then the same cycle repeats itself. I go back into another rehab, and that just continues and continues. And so it took me about 2 years to get back this time. I ended up back at the same exact detox. I went to a different halfway house, and but this halfway house, they caught on quicker. Threw me out 2 months before. You know, I got there 2 months later, they throw me out. You know, and I did the same exact thing. I got another car, I got an even better job, a nicer girlfriend, and so I'm making really good money. I'm working in the painters union back home, and I made $68,000 that year, and I had nothing to show for it. The repo guy came, looked for the car again, girlfriend broke up. Where do I end up? I end up on my mother's couch. You know, I had a, and this is where it kind of put me to Florida. I ended up in this apartment, you know, in like, you know that part in the book, I think it's, pretty sure it's Doctor's Opinion, and it talks about drinks that we see others taking with impunity, you know. So, and this is before I picked up, right, and this is just my mindset at this time in my life, you know, and I've been sober about 18 months this time. Actually, that's not even true, because, you know, I thought I was sober, but I was shooting steroids, right? And I'm the only person in the United States that did steroids and got fat, you know? I was going to the gym every day, you know, and then freaking eating cheeseburgers after, you know? But, so I'm at my friend's house, and he's not one of us. He's not an alcoholic. You know, he picks up a drink, he takes care of his family, the mortgage gets paid, the lights get paid. All those things that the normal people do get done. And so they're having wine with dinner one night. And he was like, come on over for dinner. You know, we'll have dinner, and then we'll go look for an apartment for you. And this is the night that I picked up, and I see him drinking. And I say to myself, he's drinking wine. I want a glass of wine. So I say to myself, I'm like, all right, as long as I don't do heroin, I'm going to be perfectly okay. Right? And that started it right there. So we have a couple of glasses of wine. I catch a little buzz. You know, the phenomenon of craving kicks in, and now I just want more. It doesn't happen that night, but my mind is telling me that I want to drink, and that's what I'm going to do. So we get an apartment. I furnish the whole thing. I got a few bucks in the bank. I get a new sofa, a new love seat. You know, everything's matching. Got the, you know, the cookware all match, you know. And I start cooking myself dinner every single night and polishing off a bottle of wine all by myself. You know, and that just, you know, like I said, it worked for about 3 months. And then I ended up having an overdose one night. I was at work, we went out for lunch, and that's what they do back in Massachusetts. You know, if you're in the painters union, you go out for a liquid lunch. I just never come back when I go out for lunch, you know. So I go out for lunch and we start drinking, and they're all going back, and I'm like, yeah, I'll see you guys tomorrow. Because that's how I drink. And I ended up scoring some stuff on the way home. And now my landlord lives right downstairs from me. And I ended up doing a little bit too much of what I like to do. And I ended up passing out. And I fell through a set of bifold doors. And and the guy downstairs hears it. My friend that was with me took all the stuff. And he took off. Called the ambulance before he left. And I woke up in the emergency room. And you know, what do? I have an everything must go sale. Sell all the furniture that I just got done paying good money for. And I go on a little tear real quick. And then I head into a detox, and it doesn't work. And I call my mom. Like, I'm a good alcoholic. My mom's my greatest enabler. So when things go wrong in my life, I call her. She's like, just come home, you know? Like she said plenty of times before, come on home. And I go home, and I stay there for a couple of months, and things just get progressively worse, you know? And then I come up with this. I don't know where I came up with this idea. It must have been one of those God moments. You know, I'm like, I seen my brothers come down here to Florida. My older brother moved here like, I don't know, I've been here 7 years almost. So he's probably been here about 12 to 15 years. And I see my little brother gets out of jail and my older brother gets out of prison at the same time, and they both come down here to Florida to try to stay sober. And it doesn't work. They start drinking and they start drugging when they get here, and their addiction brings them right back to Massachusetts. So I'm at this point in my life, I'm like, maybe I'll try Florida. Geographical cure, you know. And thank God it worked. You know, I called up my brother, and, you know, I'm in tears because I want my life to get better, and I had been sober 18 months one time, and I had been sober the year before, and things got good in my life. You know, I didn't work any steps, I didn't work on the person that I brought in, but my life got better, and I wanted that back, you know, and I knew about the big book, I just wasn't willing to do the work. So I call him and he says, I can't answer that question, I have to talk to my wife. And I honestly, I don't know why my older brother let me come down, because my little sister came down here like a tornado. My older brother, my younger brother, you know, they all, like, ripped through that house like a tornado. But she said, you know, we never gave Sean a shot. Let's give him a shot. You know, so I'll be forever grateful for that girl. You know, I came down here. Before I left Massachusetts, he said, you need to do two things. You need to find a job within 2 weeks, and you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did. You know, I was like, all right, I could do that. And I started going, you know, and I'm addicted to opiates at this time, so I brought some medication with me to detox myself, and I detoxed myself in the spare bedroom while I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to drive a pedal bike down the street to the A Club up in Newport Richey, and every once in a while he'd let me use his vehicle to take it to a meeting. So I raised my hand when I got there, and I said I was new to the area and I needed some numbers, and they passed out a list of numbers for me. I went there on a Sunday night. I got here on Saturday, and I went to the A Club on Sunday night, and my life just took off, I thought I was doing real good. I had a temporary sponsor. It was about a week later, you know, I got invited to a cookout from my older brother. He was like, come on, man. He was like, you're going to all these meetings. We'll go to a cookout. We'll enjoy ourselves. There's going to be, you know, swimming pool, probably some fireworks. It was, it wasn't 4th of July. It was, Memorial Day weekend coming up next month? It was Memorial Day weekend. I got invited to a cookout on Memorial Day weekend. And, I went there the first night. It was a Friday night. I went there after an AA meeting. And I didn't drink. But I had told my temporary sponsor at this time. I'm like, listen, man, I got invited to a cookout. And he goes, well, man, you think you should go? There's going to be people drinking and partying. And I was like, well, I'm not going to hide from alcohol for the rest of my life, you know. And this guy was probably just trying to give me a suggestion that might save my life. So that Saturday night, I drank. And then I walked around for a couple of weeks without telling anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that I took a drink. And I was just, it was going to start again. It was going to get bad, you know, and I'm a couple of weeks, I'm at the KISS group, and I was supposed to have a month sober, but I didn't, you know, and you all thought I had a month sober, but I didn't, you know, I had 2 weeks, and I picked up a 1 month chip, and then I raised my hand at the beginner's meeting and told you guys how great my life was, and it was just, I was a fraud, you know, I was doing the exact same things that I did back in Massachusetts, and I knew. Like, I mean, throughout those 2 weeks, I was just planning my next drunk. I was just waiting. I was waiting to get drunk again. I even tried to cop a couple times off a guy I worked with. You know, my life was going to get bad. And I was at that same meeting on a Friday night. I showed up there early. I used to help the guys who set up the coffee. And I met these couple of guys that were up there, and their name was Chris and Brian. And I knew this kid, Brian. And I knew him from, you know, being around the halls and stuff like that, and I was kind of friendly with them, and I wasn't too friendly with the guy Chris, but I wanted the guy Chris to sponsor me, so I ended up asking him that night. He started, you know, doing like what we do around here. He started asking me questions like about what I was doing with my life. He started talking to me about his drinking, and I started to identify with him, you know. And he goes, you go to a lot of meetings? And I said, yeah, I go to a meeting every night. And he was like, great, you know. And I asked him, I was like, dude, will you sponsor me? And he was like, yeah. He was like, what are you willing to do? And I was willing to do anything, you know. So I thought I was willing to do anything, you know. Because he came up to me a couple of weeks, probably about a month or two later. I was right in my fourth step, and he goes, you said you were willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And he goes, and you've been on that fourth step for like a month. He was like, either you get it done or find a new sponsor. Kind of put the fire under my butt, and I finished up that fourth step. And by this time, things started to happen in my life. You know, I started to get a few materialistic things back. I had bought a little John boat, right? And it was right around the time that Louisiana had that Gulf spill. They had that big oil spill back in Louisiana, and I thought it was going to be a good thing. You know, I got my little boat. I was like, come on, we'll go on the boat. We'll do my fourth step. It'll be great. Then we'll do a little fishing. So I go out there, and I give him my fourth step, and he reads it, and I'm feeling pretty good. We do a little fishing. I did a fourth step. I went home. I sat for an hour after. I went over the six. I did, you know, six, seven, and eight that night. And then like a couple of days later, I'm out at a friend's house, and I'm telling his father the story. I'm like, this is great. I'm on fire. I got this. I mean, I feel great. And he was like, what'd you do? I was like, I just did a fifth step with my sponsor. He goes, not even BP could clean up that mess. Took the wind right out of my sails. But I don't know. My life started to get good. I started to go through this process, and I started, you know, you go like 1 through 8. You know what I mean? And some of it doesn't feel good. You know, and I wanted to get into some of that feel good step. You know, I wanted to start making, you know, amends in step 9, and I started going to the people that I harmed and the people that I robbed from and stuff like that, and I started to make amends. My life started. I started to feel great. You know, I was really on fire with this thing. And right around that time, you know, my friend comes back into my life that I had met when I first moved down here. I met him about 90 days sober. He went away on a little vacation, you know, and he comes back into my life, and we head out to the International Convention in Texas. We drive over there. It was like 29 hours straight through. It just put me more on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, there was about 80,000 people there, and we already got our room for the one over here in Atlanta, and like, I don't know, my life is pretty amazing today. You know, we go to that convention, and it was just, I don't know, words can't even describe how I felt when I was out there and when I came back. I just started going to all these conventions and stuff, and I don't know, God willing, at the end of next month I'll have 7 years, you know, it's pretty amazing. No one in my family is sober right now. You know, actually that's not true. My little sister's sober. She's about 60 days sober right now, and that's pretty awesome, you know, but it's been a struggle watching her coming in and out of the program. You know, I've been trying to help this little girl for a lot of years, and I finally, you know, I had to, like, step back and let her, you know, get some scrapes and bruises, you know, because, you know, I was just enabling her, you know, and the guys that I hang out with, they were like, we're going to get you a set of cotton balls for Christmas, and I'm like, for what? And they were like, you keep on cushioning this girl's bottom, you know, and I'm like, I just don't know what to do with it, you know, but she's sober. She just got out of jail a couple days ago, and she's sober 60 days. She's hanging out with some girls that are, you know, pretty solid in AA that have been through the process, and they're taking her through the process, so all I can do is pray, you know. I don't know, about a couple of years sober, I joined this Fourth Dimension group, and we used to meet at the A Club over in downtown Newport Richie, and in the group, it wasn't going anywhere. It was actually dying, and we had a business meeting one night, and we decided to start looking for churches, and we started to find a church for the group, and now it's an amazing process to be a part of something like that, you know. I think we're coming up on our fourth anniversary, and it's about 120 people strong every Friday night. It's pretty amazing. I've had a lot of struggles in my almost seven years being here. You know, I get a phone call about a couple of years sober I was, and my little brother tried to commit suicide back in Massachusetts, and he jumps off this bridge in Massachusetts into the Boston Harbor. It was like 17 stories, and he tries to commit suicide, but it doesn't work. I get a phone call, and normally I'd want to drink over something like that, you know. But I had been through the process, and my first thing was to get home and finally be a sibling to my brothers and sisters, and a, a son to my mom, which I hadn't been in a long time. I just took from this lady my whole life, and I was able to just show up and be there for support, you know. And me and my little sister and my older brother, we get in the car and we drive back to Massachusetts, and we stay there for about a week, and he pulled through. You know, he got banged up pretty good, but he pulled through, and his life is pretty good today. He's not sober like I want him to be sober, but he's not using drugs and he's not drinking, and you know, I respect it. He goes to the clinic every morning and he gets a dose of methadone, and I don't know, my mom sleeps at night, you know. He's not stealing from her anymore, and I don't know. I was probably around 3 or 4 years sober at this point, and I'm dating this girl in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's got about 7 years when I meet her, and she picks up, and things just get out of control. Like, I might as well have been drinking and drugging myself with this girl, but thank you, God, I don't know, I just didn't pick up, and it just gets really bad. My behavior gets, like, out of control, you know, and I end up in front of a podium just like this, and I ended up with a restraining order on me. And the judge is pointing her finger at me, and she was like, "You're a stalker." And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, obsessive compulsive at best. You know, and it was pretty bad. Like, I would cry to my friends. I was just like, but I wasn't drinking, you know. And if that was as good as it got, I was okay with that right now. Like, because when I drink and when I drug, my life gets out of control really, really quick. And I didn't pick up a drink, you know. And sad to say, that girl passed away, you know, from alcoholism. Direct result from alcoholism. She fell down and she bumped her head and she never woke up, you know. And that's what happens to drunks like me, you know. Those things happen, you know. It's just, I'm just really grateful that it didn't. A lot of great things have happened in my life, though, from being here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I met another girl, and we had a son 17 months ago, and it's been... I never thought I could actually be so unselfish in my life. You know, like, this little boy, he's amazing. You know, he's got a little Boston accent coming in. It's pretty funny. It really is. Like, I talk to him every day on the phone, and he's only throwing, like, one or two words together, but I'm like, "You love Dada?" And he's like, "Yeah." It's hilarious, you know. But this, you know, my girlfriend, she gets pregnant, and we end up right down here in St. Pete, at this hospital in St. Pete, and it was probably one of the scariest moments of my sobriety, you know. And I definitely didn't want to drink over it, but I was definitely full of fear, because, you know, she's in labor for like 24 hours, and the baby ain't coming, and they got to do whatever they got to do to get this baby out of her, and and she has to have a C-section. So they got me all up in these scrubs and stuff with these things on my feet and stuff like that, and tears just start falling out of my eyes, because, like, for the first time, I'm like, I'm worried about these. Like, I want them to come home safe, you know. And I'm in this little hallway all by myself, and then they're like, "Come on in the room," and out comes this little baby boy, and it was like, I've never cried so hard in my life, you know. It was an amazing time in my life, and like, I didn't want to be a father. Like, I just turned 40 on January 1st, you know, and like, I'm raising this kid now. Like, those weren't in the plans. I'll tell you that. I'm selfish and self-centered to the core, and I didn't want to have a child because of those reasons. You know, I didn't want, like, now, like, I can't do what I want to do anymore, you know. Like, I want to go fishing every weekend. I can't do that, you know? I don't know. Like, I haven't seen him all day, and, like, I can't... Like, I just want to go home and spend a little time with him, but he's going to be sleeping, and that's okay. You know, and me and the girl, we got... Like, we just recently got back together about a month ago, and things are pretty amazing. You know, I've been trying a lot of things different, like... My buddy at home, my buddy Charlie from back home, and he's a he's a great part of my sobriety, and it's just over the phone, but like I've developed a relationship with this man, and he's a true member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he lives by the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And anytime I'm all fued up about anything, he was like, like I'd be pulling up to the house all fued up about, you know, this relationship that I'm in, and he'd be like, hey, before you hang up, I'm like, what? I gotta go in here and fight with this girl. And he's like, leave Sean in the car, you know? And I try and go in there and I try to be godly today, and it's been working out pretty good. You know, I've been praying a lot. You know, I've been trying to, you know, I definitely hit my knees before I go to, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I hit my knees and I just like, I ask God to put work in front of me on a daily basis, you know, and I just ask Him to put His kids in front of me that I can help. And I don't know, so far it's been working out.